just treated like it was the flu in terms of.
Welcome back to Season 2 of the Pandemoscene podcast, where we attempt to produce knowledge that orients us towards justice at this critical historical juncture. Our overarching theme for this season is listening to the pandemic. Over this last year, many of our standard modes of collectively learning and perceiving the world have been forced to shift and adapt. In the wake of these changes, we as a team of students at UC Santa Cruz have been experimenting with new ways of sensing our interconnected worlds, especially how we listen and who we listen to. Our aim has been to denaturalize listening. To facilitate this, we have asked ourselves a set of social and ethical questions, such as when we listen, whose worlds are we tuning into and whose worlds are we not tuned into? Whose voices have been amplified over this last year and whose voices have become or have remained submerged? Through having conversations, we have listened to how different communities have responded to the multiple crises of this year, as well as how the pandemic has intersected with movements for racial and social justice. We consider listening to be an act of world making. We invite our listeners to also tune in wherever you are and experiment with us. With a refocused awareness, what new insights may arise about how to connect across divides to learn and live together in the pandemoscene? COVID-19 has and is continuing to open up old wounds on a global scale. In terms of gender inequality, the pandemic has had especially regressive effects. Studies show that women are far more vulnerable than men to the detrimental economic and social effects of COVID due to obstinate realities of gender inequality. In honor of Women's History Month, in today's episode, we have conversations with four women around the country from different ethnic and social backgrounds and discuss the intersectionality of gender and race and their individual experiences with the pandemic in their personal and professional lives. First, we speak to Aisata Ba, a student at UC Santa Cruz and a social media influencer with a total of 10,000 followers across platforms and around 270,000 views on her YouTube channel, Aisata Amadou. So how has COVID changed your content? You're a YouTuber and you have content on social media like TikTok and Instagram. How has your content shifted during this pandemic?
Well, I would say that I've just had a lot more time to spend making content, which has been honestly great, but the content itself has definitely become a lot more at home and just like home-based. So a lot of the content that I'm posting now has been focused more on things that I like to do at home, like reading and stuff like that. And as for opportunities to collaborate with brands during the pandemic, I would say ever since the pandemic has started, I've had really, really fun opportunities. I actually got to work with Curology, which is a skincare company, and I also worked with PacSun as well. But you would be surprised how many opportunities there still are during the pandemic.
That's amazing. And, you know, I know a lot of companies, especially with what happened in 2020 and the resurgence of the BLM movement, a lot of companies are trying to diversify and, you know, amplify voices of minorities. So what do you think about that as a person of color?
Yeah, I think it's great. I'm honestly really happy that, you know, we're kind of in this phase where we're actually starting to care about diversity and starting to push for it and call out companies and brands that haven't shown diverse creators in their the media that they're posting. So I'm really happy about it. And I'm loving the direction things are going and where the conversation is going.
So am I. And honestly, I'm very happy that you got that opportunity to work with these big brands. You know, PacSun is huge, and so is Curology. But unfortunately, due to the years of the media overshadowing Black and Brown voices, especially voices of Black and Brown women, and replacing those with a white demographic, at the end of the day, when I think of an influencer, quote unquote, or just a social media personality, the truth is I don't think automatically of someone like you, a Black girl, a Muslim girl. I think of a white, skinny, rich girl. And I feel like for so long, ever since social media has emerged and become part of our day to day, that's what we've been conditioned to imagine, despite all of the diversity that exists on social media. So, I mean, I hope that these campaigns and what these brands are doing actually makes a change in how we see influencers.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I really can't emphasize how important it is to have diverse representation, because I would say, you know, I grew up with social media. And when I was younger, a lot of the influencers that I saw really didn't look like me. They were, as you said, whiter and a certain body type and a certain, you know, demographic. So it's so nice to be able to finally see creators and influencers that are being highlighted now that actually look like me, that I can draw inspiration from, and that I can just be motivated by on a daily basis.
Yeah, for sure. And on TikTok, it's probably one of the biggest social media platforms that people in Gen Z like us use. And it's so interesting because I don't know what it is about the algorithm, but it just that the videos that get the most views and the main influencers on there, Emma Chamberlain, Charlie and Dixie, what's her name? Addison Rae. Yeah, all of those white girls. And guys, too, the Hype House and all that, they're the ones getting all the views, whereas there's actually so much talent coming from people of color, and it's so unfortunate that they aren't getting the representation that they deserve.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Well, one thing I love about TikTok, anyone, it's so easy to start, you know, a TikTok. I feel like TikTok is a lot more of an accessible platform as compared to YouTube. So I've been seeing a lot more diversity on TikTok, and I'm loving what I'm seeing.
That kind of brings me to my next question. So just looking through your channel, you have such a diverse array of video types, I guess. You have a video talking about the coronavirus, your commentary on that. You have 2020 election commentary. You have a video talking about the portrayal of Blackness in books and Muslim representation in the media. And you even talked about your own experiences with Islamophobia. But then you also have like college vlogs and makeup tutorials and clothing hauls and all that. So I just wanted to ask, how do you navigate that space? How are you using your platform to not only shed light on social justice issues, but also have it fun and lighthearted at the same time?
Yeah, when I first started my channel, I would say I kind of fell into this mindset of I need to fit into a niche. I need to just make videos about books and that's it. But I found that I just wasn't fulfilled creatively from doing that at a certain point. And so I decided to break free from that mold. And recently, I just have been really just making videos that on things that inspire me on a daily basis. So I really find that the balance that I find between the different types of content that I make is that like whatever I'm inspired by that week is what I will make a video on. And my videos where I kind of do more discussion-based videos on social justice commentary, they typically come at moments where I have something that I feel like I need to say that I'm inspired by, you know, that's happening in my life or in the larger world.
Yeah, and I've seen an amazing intersectionality in your videos of how you're talking about a movie, but then you also shed light on how you perceive it as a person of color and you critique it. And I think that's so amazing. And also, you said you started out as a BookTube channel, which one on the side note, I love that BookTube is becoming popular now. Like people are getting back into reading. I think that's so great. But anyway, besides that, you did a thing in February because it was Black History Month. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so in February it was Black History Month, so I wanted to focus in a little bit more on my TBR, the books that I was reading that month. I wanted them all to feature Black stories because I just wanted to focus in more on Black stories. I wanted to promote more Black stories on my channel as well. So I read basically all books that I read that month featured Black stories. And at the end of the month, I talked about all of them. And what I found a lot is I draw a lot of inspiration for the topics that I talk about on my channel from the books that I read, but then also the movies and TV shows that I watch. They very much inspire different discussions, and they make me really think about things that are going on in the world.
Yeah, I totally see that. I wanted to talk about how have you seen other influencers' content shift during 2020, and how do you see yours differing from theirs, or any similarities between the two?
I find that really interesting to talk about because I feel like I've seen two different avenues of ways that creators have changed their content or how their content has been changed by the pandemic. There are either the creators where over quarantine and through the global pandemic, they have really bolstered up their content and they've been posting a lot. Like I saw some creators at the beginning of the pandemic post everyday vlogs, which is insane. But then there are other creators where they benefited a lot from the type of world that we were living in before the pandemic. I would say like David Dobrik,
like yeah.
Vlogs, yes, his vlogs have like basically stopped. Or I don't know if you know about the Dolan twins. They basically have left YouTube and they're only podcasting now.
Wow. So I know podcasts have been big too during the pandemic.
Yeah, and so many people have been starting podcasts and I've been loving it because I love that platform. But yeah, it's been affecting creators in really interesting ways.
That's an interesting point I've never thought of. But on a completely different note, I wanted to ask how you have been personally impacted by 2020 differently as a woman of color compared to that of white America.
Specifically speaking as a Black female identifying person, 2020 has been a very traumatic year. You know, obviously there was the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement back earlier last year with, you know, the whole George Floyd situation. But I feel like it was interesting to see how the world reacted to it, because as a Black person who has been aware of police brutality for years, this is not new. This is something that I've been seeing and noticing since as early as 2013. Even if I am pretty young, like it's something that I have been very conscious of. So it's interesting to see that people are now finally seeing the problems that are going on in this country. I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for the fact that people are now starting to care and take notice of it in light of the tragedy. But a part of it is very disheartening as someone who has, I don't know, felt exhausted from speaking out for years about the issues going on in this country.
I'm not a Black person, so I have no idea what that feels like. The years of brutality and injustice towards Black men and women, respectively, that America has tried to tune out for so long is finally being addressed, and the uncomfortable conversations are being had, and people are finally starting to slowly take accountability for their racism. You look at Bachelor Nation with Chris Harrison just a few weeks ago, how he, like, even in 2020, on an interview with Rachel Lindsay, he was just perpetrating racism and white superiority complex. And he was basically, this is kind of off topic, but he was saying, if you're racist in 2018, it's okay, because that was in 2018, which is crazy that he would say something like that. Racism is racism. But yeah, I think it's exactly what you're talking about with white people, for the most part, most white people not even knowing racism exists and police brutality existed before George Floyd's death, I guess. That was the catalyst.
Exactly. George Floyd's death, as we know, that wasn't the first time something like that has happened. It's happened so many times before, and it's nothing new, sadly. So, you know, it's disheartening, but at the same time, I'm hoping that it is a wake-up call that we all need.
So what are your greatest concerns about how COVID is shaping our world?
I would say just seeing sometimes the lack of empathy that people have, you know, with the healthcare system and how people just are refusing to wear masks, and how we're seeing how important healthcare is and how healthcare is a fundamental human right. And yet we're still having debates on how the healthcare system works today and whether or not people should be afforded affordable healthcare. So I think that is a great concern of mine. And I think especially seeing how this pandemic has affected all of us, I think we do need to take a closer look at how the healthcare system in America is working and what we can change.
100%. You know, besides it being a pandemic of COVID-19, it's also been a pandemic of antipathy and indifference, I guess, and just people not really caring about each other at the end of the day. But in reality, they don't see the deep scars that they're forming within the fabric of our society
by refusing to wear a mask.
So on a lighter note, I guess, how have you been finding hope during the pandemic, and what gives you hope for the future?
I would say right now, what has been giving me the most hope is just seeing how forward-thinking and progressive and how advocating our generation is. Generation Z, like especially some of the TikToks that I see, just seeing how much people in our generation care, it brings a lot of hope for me for the future.
Next, we talk to Dr. Patti Al-Gharabi, a postdoctoral researcher and materials scientist at the University of Pennsylvania. How has your pandemic experience been so far?
Oh, actually, I don't know, say that so bad or so good, because I moved from Australia to the US at the start of the pandemic. So it was a very stressful situation for me for a long flight and then moving from different cities inside of the US. Also, I started my work here, and to be honest, I haven't seen my advisor so far in person. So we just have virtual meeting, and you know, from one view, it's very hard because we don't have any social life. So we have some challenges in work and in life. But on the other hand, because I finished my PhD in 2019, and I studied so hard from undergrad to master degree and then to PhD, I never had time to take a rest and enjoy the life. So yeah, for the past year, it was a very good time for me to get relaxed, sleep more and more, and spend more time with my husband, because it was the first year of our life that we started together.
Congratulations, so, by the way.
That's great news. Thank you. Yes. And for the whole night and day, we were just together. So it was a good time from this view that we had sometimes to be together. And yeah.
That's great. I mean, I'm so happy for you that you finally get to relax and press pause at least a little bit on your life and enjoy your time with your husband. I wanted to ask about your experience in Australia. So when you were in Australia, was it during COVID? How was it there?
Yes, actually, if you may know that it officially started in January 2020 in the world. So in the first month, we had some new cases, COVID cases in Australia. But the good point was that from the first day, the government started to, you know, ask everyone to wear masks and just be very careful about everything, social distancing and this stuff. So they controlled it very well. Mm-hmm. And it was very good. It was very good because, you know, when you know that the number of the cases is not too high, so you are not that much stressed. Mm-hmm. So we would just spend some time with our family and close friends without being concerning about the COVID. So it was very good.
Oh, that's so great. I'm so happy that you had that experience and people in Australia were cooperative with the mandates. I wanted to ask you more on the work-related side. What have been some of the responses to COVID from others in your field? Mm-hmm. Like, have they done any research related to COVID?
Yes. The things that happened in research area about COVID was that it's very interesting that everyone tried to apply for grants on COVID study, including, for example, civil department, mechanical department, aerospace department, every school applied for COVID staff. For example, I was in materials school and they started to apply for a grant to study the effect of COVID viruses on the surface to see that how does it work on different surfaces, including metals, wood, or any kind of stuff. Yeah, for me, it was very interesting that regardless of the department and the school, everyone just want to work on COVID stuff.
Yeah, they're essential to our way of life now. We need more research on COVID-19 to help us get out of this mess.
Yes, exactly. And good point for researchers was that, you know, when we publish a work on a topic, then it's very important for us to be cited. So if our citation is getting high, so it's very good for our CV. So during pandemic, we could see that those who published the work on COVID stuff, they were cited, for example, more than 1,000 times in less than 6 months. So it was so surprising to see that.
Yeah.
Because it never happens. For example, for getting cited 1,000 times, it takes normally 5 to 10 years.
Wow.
But because it was a hot topic in the world.
That's crazy. I had no idea. So you talked about research productivity in 2020 and how it's oriented, how a lot of people, the hot topic now is oriented towards COVID. On that note, studies show that in comparison to men, women's research productivity in 2020 has statistically been lower. So how have you experienced this? Have you been able to resonate with this statistic? And why or how do you think this is that, you know, women's research has gone down during 2020? Well, in reality, both men and women's research has gone down during 2020, but women's research has gone down significantly more than that of men's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to answer this question, I can say that firstly, I feel that women are more affected by COVID. I think mentally I was so affected with COVID. I was very, very stressed. So I found that I'm not productive. I'm not productive in my research. And that because we stayed at home, most of the women preferred to cook by themselves. And for me, it was very important to have our meals very healthy. So I spend more time on cooking to make sure that we have all the vitamins and good stuff, nutrition.
Yeah.
And also when I talk to my some of my friends who are mom, they said that during this time we had to take care of our kids. So we spend a lot of time to teach them and to play with them. So we had to be both teacher and mother. So, you know, for a long term, I think that it affects the women very, very bad. And yeah, that could be the reason.
Yeah, thank you for speaking on this because it's so unfortunate. Before COVID happened, we would think that gender equality, just the response to COVID has shown that at the end of the day, domestic responsibilities such as, you know, taking care of kids, cooking, taking care of the house, cleaning, fall on the backs of women. And that has reflected in these statistics of research productivity and the percentage of women who have had to step down from their jobs to take care of their kids and families, whereas the husbands don't have that expectations on them. In relation to that, how has your experience been as a woman of color, as an immigrant, the United States, in your field in STEM?
Yeah, honestly, because I have the experience of living in two different countries, except my home country, Australia and the US, you know, I can very well compare them to each other. For example, when I working as a research assistant in Australia, I never feel this background, for example, because many people came from different cultures and different countries, including China, Asian countries, Europe, everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it didn't affect my work. But when I started my job here in the US, I'm not sure, maybe because of the COVID pandemic, I was very sensitive or I was very new here, but I really can feel that sometimes when I speak to my co-workers at the uni, I can see that it's very hard for them to accept me as an international woman who works in a top-ranked uni in the US. I think it's very hard for them to accept me. For example, sometimes I can see that they ask me to repeat my questions or some things for several times. Honestly, I can understand that they get my point, but they want to mention to my accent to tell that, for example, we cannot understand what are you talking about. Or sometimes they try to speak very, very slowly to tell me that you cannot understand English, or maybe it's very hard for you to follow us. And also sometimes, which is very sad for me, is that I can see we have some meetings with our sponsors in the government. And unfortunately, because of my nationality, I cannot take part in those meetings. And at first, I was so embarrassed when I see that all of my team can go for that meeting except me. But after that, when my American advisor talked to me and he said that, sorry, Paria, we know that don't make sense, but unfortunately, you cannot come to the meeting, but just please make sure that we are there to answer any question instead of you. So this kind of things made me feel better. But at the end of the day, it's very sad to feel that in the modern life, we still can see this kind of problems that backs to our nationality or background.
Yeah, I'm first of all, I'm so sorry that you've went through this. And I want to say thank you for talking about this, because I feel like it's not something that we normally talk about. Subtle racist things that immigrants especially and women have to endure in the workplace. So I really appreciate you speaking on it.
And Sophia John, I really sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay.
But I really like to mention some things to your audience, that specifically for female who comes from the countries in, for example, in Asia, I should say that just trust them. They are, in my opinion, they are the most powerful people in the world, because if you just listen to them for an hour and ask them to talk about their challenges through their life, then you will understand that how a person can be powerful to get through of these kind of challenges. And once, when I was in Australia, I had an interview with a Zeiss company, which is a very famous company on microscopes and cameras, memories, this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And the manager asked me that, what was your biggest challenge in your life? And I said that I can only say that I'm an Iranian girl who is now in Australia and doing her PhD. And he was thinking for some seconds, and then he said that, oh, yes, that's true.
That's a great point that you mentioned. It's so sad that people of color, people underestimate them, at least in the US, we've seen that, and there are microaggressions and racist microaggressions. So it's not a reflection on you, it's a reflection on them and that ugly part of white America. So what have been your greatest concerns of how COVID is shaping our world?
My greatest concern is that now I feel that we are very far from each other, from our families. For example, I can see some of my friends who haven't seen their grandma and grandpa for a long time, for several months. It's very sad. And I feel that for the long term, it will affect us so bad. And, you know, I really hope that some things happen, same as vaccines or a treatment, whatever, but it's solved. This issue is solved because in long term, rather than the physical problem, I feel that the mental problem will be the biggest concern of the world.
Like mental health?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yes, because I know that now they have very difficult time with mental health, but most of the time people try not to speak about it because they don't want to get it bigger and bigger.
Next, we have a conversation with Mrs. Ekta Mangani, a receptionist at Saddleback Hospital in Orange County, California. Can you tell me about your work at the hospital? I know you work with a lot of women.
Yeah, I work with Saddleback, and I'm more out in the breast center. So yeah, we are mostly with the women only, our patients, because, you know, we do mammograms. And
so I wanted to ask you, studies show that about 75% of healthcare workers in most cities are women, and many are overwhelmingly women of color. So can you just talk about your experience being part of that majority group?
It's just, I feel working with women, it's, women are so strong, you know, because it's been 1 year with so much going on, but we share the stories with each other, we share strength with each other, and that helps, we motivate, we cooperate and share the stories and give each other, you know, support each other in different ways because they come from different backgrounds, different culture, different upbringing. So it is very interesting. But you know, it's empowering when we listen their struggle stories and how they come up mm-hmm. with, you know, how the families come together, how the community comes together.
I want to ask, you're a mother and you also work, so I want to know about what your biggest challenges you have faced professionally and at home throughout this pandemic.
You know, it's when it was beginning of the pandemic, we had to work a little more to accommodate the needs of the different departments. So we did help each other. So we had to share our departments. We work in our breast center. We had to go to the ER. We had to go to different places because they needed, there was more demand. They needed more nurses or more admin people to. Mm-hmm. So it was a little difficult to balance the family and the professional life. But, you know, it was the need. It was that time where we had to support each other, and we did. We came together and helped each other, and it was fun, and it was a good feeling of giving.
Yeah, because this time at the pandemic, it's never happened before, at least in our lifetimes, and it's insane to think that our entire country relied on you, on healthcare workers, and a majority of healthcare workers are women and women of color. So I think for real, they are the true heroes of 2021 and 2020, and we couldn't have gotten through the pandemic without healthcare workers like you and your coworkers. So thank you so much for what you've done during this time and putting in the extra hours. I want to know, how have you been finding hope during the pandemic, and what gives you hope for the future?
You know, I'm very glad to hear that the vaccine, like, you know, the vaccine is here, and the government is working hard to spread the vaccine as soon as possible so that they get the vaccine, everybody gets it, so that the country is back to work, the unemployment numbers go up, and then the kids go to school. So I am happy with, you know, whatever the management, the planning going on behind the scenes, that they are trying to rush so that, you know, kids are fed up at school, they need, or at home, they need to go back to school, they need their, you know, their friends. So I think a vaccine is a big hope at this time.
Lastly, we speak to Dr. Sarlati, a physician at Kaiser who has been working with COVID patients since the pandemic. Can you share what your experience has been like in your work? I know you work with COVID patients. Can you just talk about what it has been like so far for you?
So far, at the beginning, it was really hard because we were seeing people that are suffering, and there were many unknown fields that we didn't know what to do, and we didn't know how to answer people's questions. But now things are getting better these days.
How has your identity as an immigrant and as a woman impacted your experience in the medical field? And also, you know, with COVID, we've seen Black and brown people specifically being disproportionately impacted by COVID. So can you talk about that?
As a physician, you know, I'm working as a hospitalist. It means that when people are really sick, that they cannot be managed as an outpatient and in the clinic, and they end up in the hospital, that's the time that I'm working and then I'm managing them. So most of the time, they see me for the first time. So they have to accept me and trust me as an unknown physician. So we didn't have any communication or relationship before admission to the hospital. So this is going to be a little bit hard, especially because I have accent, especially for my as a woman. Sometimes it's hard and I have to work on to earn their trust after 2 or 3 days. And then whenever they see that, okay, this is the doctor that paying attention and is really concerning about their problem, and then they start to trust me. But this happens rarely. Okay. Especially the area that I'm working is a Hispanic area. Yeah, I'm working in the Riverside area, so I can say 80% of my patients are Hispanic. And unfortunately, COVID disease are more aggressive and more common in Hispanic area because I think they are more people are living in a small apartment, so the density of the community is more than other areas. Mm-hmm. That's why you see that the whole family is getting infected.
Right.
And because of their comorbidities that they have, usually they get severe disease. And that's the problem. So I see many, many Hispanic ones that come to the hospital, and the death rate is higher than other, ethnicities. And between them, usually they are more older people, and there are people with diabetes, there are people with obesity, and that's why the COVID is more aggressive in their area.
In what inspiring ways have you seen your colleagues working together to form a response to the pandemic?
We worked as a family. You know, we had a retired physician that they were not even in our field. For example, they were gynecologists, retired, or they were pediatrician. But when our census in the hospital went so high, everybody came to help us. So, and they were, we were trained them for a short period of time to see the COVID patient, and they were, you know, they agreed, they came, and they were rounding on the patients and helping us a lot. And we helped the intensivists as well. You know, the patients that are on ventilator, usually being seen by a ICU physicians, intensivists. But when the COVID hits us, the census went up. So there were many, many patients that had a breathing tube and they were on ventilator. So, and then we were helping them to manage some patients, you know, to help them to take care of those patients, and the other physician came and helped us. So we were like a family.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you faced working through this pandemic?
You know, because of the pandemic, there was the hospital's visiting policies that they didn't let any family member to visit their beloved ones. So the patients were alone in the hospital, suffering alone, and with no visitor. So one of my biggest challenges that every day I have to call the family and update them about their loved one's situation. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's so hard to call the family every day and telling them the bad news.
Right.
Or, you know, they are asking some questions that we don't have an answer. Mm-hmm. We don't know why they are getting worse all of a sudden. We don't know what's happening and why they are not responding to our approved, you know, treatments. One of the challenges are the patients that speak limited English or they don't speak English at all. And because of the hospital policy, none of the family member can be with them. So
our communication with them is with through the line language interpreter or video Spanish interpreter. This is the only way of communication that we have with them, and so that's why they are suffering alone, and many of them are getting confused, especially the old people. They are getting confused, delirious, because they wake up in an unfamiliar environment and there are strange people around them that doesn't speak their language. So that is one of the biggest challenges in the pandemic.
Wow. I don't know how you go to work every day, and it takes so much strength. And I just want to say thank you so much for all the work that you've put in at the hospital. We wouldn't have been able to get through this pandemic without hardworking physicians and healthcare workers like you. So really, thank you. I want to know also, what are your greatest concerns about how COVID-19 is shaping the world on a larger scale?
I believe it, the human relationship changed forever. Although with the vaccine, they're trying to go back to their normal life. But I think it's this concern and this anxiety stays with us forever. Whenever we are facing another person, or we are in a gathering, or we are going to a restaurant, because of the danger of the infection. Mm-hmm. And with all of these new mutations, so hopefully it doesn't happen, but I believe this pandemic changed the human relationship and interactions forever.
Listening to these four individuals have brought to our attention the specific ways in which women are more vulnerable to the pandemic, within the whitewashed realm of social media, within scientific research, and in the healthcare system. We have seen the diverse ways in which women, specifically women of color, have been impacted by this pandemic disproportionately. Understanding the harm that comes with a deficit of hearing diverse voices, especially during historical events such as the COVID-19 pandemic, is crucial. Their stories help create a collective understanding of the pandemic, of our world. As we heard from Mrs. Mangani, we gather strength and inspiration from our surrounding stories, and we invite our listeners to ask themselves who and what they are listening to, and what understanding of the pandemic does that leave you with and without? What should our collective understanding even be? When writing the history of this pandemic, whose voices will be represented? In honor of Women's History Month, in this episode, I've highlighted the need to listen to women. We live in a world where our history has been perpetually written by white men, where time and time again women of color have been disregarded and used by society, where they have been underestimated and overshadowed with an onslaught of racism and sexism. Although listening won't solve these problems, it's undoubtedly a step in the right direction. Thank you so much for tuning in.